Hey guys, it's Adam. I know it's been a while. I'm back. I thought I'd just give you guys a quick update on what's going on with the show, what's been going on with me, and then I'll release this episode of How the Hell Did We Bind Up Here, a new podcast that I went on last week to talk about Ruby Ridge and homesteading and all the normal stuff. So Deborah and I have decided just to take the summer off. I know I didn't really let anybody know what's going on, so sorry about that. But yeah, like I said in past shows, it gets real crazy here in the springtime, and then summer rolls around and it's nothing but projects. We've had some hard times, but a really good summer so far. Gotten to go on a couple vacations, got to go to Idaho, got to go to Northern California, and yeah, in the meantime, just been working my butt off on the farm, reading lots of books, spending time with the family, and it's been a really nice summer. Hasn't been too hot here. Yeah, even gotten a little bit of rain, which is nice every once in a while, and yeah, just really enjoying life. The sheep are doing well. Dogs are doing good. The guard dogs are getting big, and we're having a good time. Definitely on a lot of stuff to improve on, but we're just learning every day. But Deborah and I have decided that we will come back. Deborah said she wants to come back in September. Maybe in the meantime, I will do a few solo episodes and maybe release some other episodes if people want to come on with me solo. And to everybody that's reached out and told me that they miss a show or that they, you know, are going through withdrawals, that makes me feel really good. And I'm happy that I get to be one of your, you know, at least your seventh favorite somewhat conspiracy podcast. Taking time off has been really good. It's made me realize what's good in life and what I need to be paying attention to. I think when we come back, we're going to be doing a lot of book reviews, but maybe just one-sided where I read the book and present it to Deborah. I think that's really good. I finally finished Program to Kill. And I got to admit that just the numbers when I started doing book reviews really, really dropped off. It kind of bummed me out, but I think going forward, it's probably going to be what we're going to do. And if people don't want to listen to that, that's fine with me. It's doing what we want to do. And what I'm interested in right now is a lot of 90s stuff, a lot of parapolitics. I just read a book called The Silent Brotherhood, kind of about what was going on with the white separatist movement in the Pacific Northwest in the 80s. You know, all this PATCON stuff and government informants pre-Ruby Ridge, pre-Waco, pre-Oklahoma City. So I want to get into all this stuff. I want to do Oklahoma City. I want to read Aberration in the Heartland of the Real by Dr. Wendy Painting and present that. Right now I'm reading Painted Black by Carl Raschke, which is a kind of about, it's a book from the 80s about Satanism in pop culture and rock and roll, and I'd like to read that and see how it pertains to, you know, what's in the 80s. It started out as heavy metal and now it's into pop culture, so I'd like to see kind of where it started, and just that's what's really piquing my interest now. All the other stuff that we used to do, all the speculation and all that stuff, I'm not that quite into anymore. I just would rather do stuff that I know happened and look into the government collusion, who was involved in it, and all that stuff. That's good enough for me. And yeah, hopefully you guys will stick around and be along for the ride with me. And everybody who sent me messages on Patreon, sorry I didn't get back to you. I canceled the Patreon, so I wasn't able to respond to messages on my creator account anymore. So if I didn't get back to you on there, that's why. But yeah, once again, thanks everybody for sticking around and letting me know that they want to hear us keep going. So but in the meantime, yeah, here's the episode that I did with my new friend John about Ruby Ridge and kind of what it meant for history and how it got us to where we are now, and hopefully you like it. It's one of my favorite topics, and I just ordered a book. I forget what it's called, but it's a good one by a author who's particularly based on the topic. So I'm going to read that. Maybe we can do a deep dive onto that. And yeah, I hope you enjoy what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep doing it. And yeah, hopefully you stick around. All right. Love you guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the fifth episode of How the Hell Do We Wind Up Here podcast. Have Adam from the Deborah Gets Red Pill podcast with me. Really appreciate him coming on. Talk a little bit just about kind of where we see the world, kind of what's going on. Maybe talk about a few things that have kind of led up to it, and just kind of get his point and our point of view and go from there. So Adam, really appreciate it. Thanks for hooking up tonight.
Yeah, no problem, man. A lot of people helped me out along the way, especially when I first got started. So I'm always down to do it for everybody else. I can remember I think for my fifth or sixth episode, I had like Ricky Verandas from Ripple Effect came on for me, you know, like when I was getting like 50 downloads an episode. So it's cool.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's, you know, the first four and now you have, you know, I've been people kind of from this community and just really willing to jump on and help out and, you know, give tips and tricks and just talk about a few things. So it's been real good. So really looking forward to getting into it. For those of you who are, well, this podcast is new, so I guess anybody would be new to this podcast if they found it. You know, we just kind of talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in the world and, you know, maybe things in the past that have kind of led up to it and just kind of identify some things. So Adam, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so I guess you asked me if I wanted, you want me to just get right into the absolutely. Topic that I picked? You asked me what I wanted to do, an event from history. I love history. I majored in history in college and, have figured out that everything I learned in college was maybe not the real history, you know, but, I've always been a fan of history. You know, a lot of kids in high school don't like it and stuff like that. And it was always my favorite. So, you know, I pursued it all the way through college and it got me nowhere financially in life, but you know, it's a cool it's a cool way to be able to think. And I think the problem with a lot of people that pursue it at the higher education level is that they aren't willing to realize that everything that they learned was maybe not the right way to learn about stuff. So
well, and it's really hard when your finances depend on going with what you learn versus trying to buck the trend. So
yeah, exactly. And we see that in so many different types of professions. You know, the medical profession, you know, like a good example of that is just like Egyptology and like all the Graham Hancock stuff and like all the people that can't change, even though there's irrefutable evidence that what he's putting forward is correct, you know. So
it's like arguing with my kid when he was six, just being obstinate. He knew he was wrong, but he would never admit it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It would be like he would have to argue against if you weren't going to give him his allowance or something like that, you know. But, you know, everything that I see today in the world that's going on, kind of from my worldview, is that the government is trying to roll out this whole narrative of the, you know, the patriot movement, the white nationalists, the, you know, the MAGA Republicans, the Proud Boys. And it's all, you know, I don't feel like any of it's genuine or real. There's definitely those groups out there, but none of them are based in a ethos of racism or, you know, anything like that. I mean, those people are all misled and stuck in the left-right paradigm as well, but I'm always going to fall closer on the conservative side than the progressive left, you know, and I think most people in our little version of this conspiracy world kind of are the same way, you know. I think the more you go down the rabbit holes, I mean, for me, I went down the rabbit hole until Jesus popped up. So, I mean, I think like a lot of people are getting that way. And, but I just, want to let everybody know that this is like a rerun. This is the second time the government's jumped on this trend of the white nationalist patriot movement. The first time was in the late 80s and early 90s. And it centered on a whole bunch of, different events like, the Oklahoma, the Waco, all sorts of stuff like that. Bill Cooper, the old AM radio, Patriot radio show
Oh,
host, Bill Cooper, Bo Greitz, all those guys, And the the Oklahoma City thing goes super deep. I was really obsessed with Waco and David Koresh and all that when it was happening when I was in seventh or eighth grade. I was glued to the TV watching that go on in whatever it was, 93 or 92, something like that. And but right before, so that must have been 92, right before Waco happened, the siege at Ruby Ridge took place in Northern Idaho. I'm a kid that grew up in the Pacific Northwest in Oregon, and that was, pretty close to us. And this whole kind of white supremacist patriot movement thing was going on in Idaho, Montana, Washington, Oregon, the whole Pacific Northwest. So it kind of, I had my eyes on it, and I enjoy learning about it to this day. And it gets into gave birth to this thing that the FBI and a whole bunch of different three-letter agencies colluded on called PATCON, which stood for the Patriot Conspiracy. And it was just every agency had informants just all over the place. A lot of times they were, informants and interacting with informants, again, kind of like what we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan and stuff when the CIA and the FBI's guys were fighting each other. So but Ruby Ridge is story of Randy Weaver and his family is the one that's if there's anything that the government's done in my lifetime that's upset me the most, it's that. Second, close second would be Waco. And they happened right after each other. Waco was in response to what they did at Ruby Ridge. Waco was supposed to be the thing that they did that ended up really good, that got them back in the good graces of the public. So, you want me to just get into kind of this history and the story of it?
And before you start too, I did want to ask you, granted it's Hollywood, it's scripted, it's going to be kind of presented in, the light that they want it to be, but have you had a chance to watch Showtime did a series called Waco, and then they did a secondary series called about the aftermath of Waco, and it's really centered around the negotiator who was
Yeah,
the main negotiator.
I saw the first one and it did a good job.
It is fantastic.
There's been a whole bunch of other garbage that came, I mean, there's stuff that came out right after it happened with I think it was Randy Quaid was in it, and there was like at some point like some old lady that was inside the compound like with like a fully automatic M16 like breaking out a window pane with the barrel of the gun and like shooting at the feds and like come and get it or something like that. But yeah, I did watch that Waco one and I liked all of it except for the part when they decided to turn a whole bunch of women and children into barbecue meat and like the ATF was like crying about it. It's like no, they went and they posed for pictures in front of the smoldering ashes of
I was surprised about how bad of a light they shined though on the FBI and the ATF and all that in that show. I was impressed with how with that they did that at least.
Remember, I was just thinking about this today. Remember those congressional hearings where they were trying to get like the new head of the ATF and they were interviewing that Chipman guy that was just the biggest piece of shit in the world who like wouldn't he was like the original couldn't define what a woman was. He couldn't define what a assault rifle was. And yeah, thank God that guy just got pushed to the side and kind of disappeared. He's probably a pencil pusher making
He's probably in like
$120,000 a
Alaska,
year or something,
probably in Alaska somewhere,
Yeah,
or
he's at Fort Wainwright up in Fairbanks or something like that. But yeah, he was there. There's pictures of him posing in front of the smoldering ashes,
All
But
right.
I would like, you said it's on Showtime. I would like to watch the second part that deals with that negotiator. I like that actor that plays that guy.
And it deals with the so the second part deals with there were four people who were put on trial after Waco,
Okay.
to be held accountable.
Thibodeau, was it
Yeah,
Thibodeau?
Thibodeau. And then there's three others. And so it really goes into their court trial and really the dirty pool that was played against them. You know,
Yeah.
everything that that the government did, even to the point of, and this is 30 years old now or whatever, so I'm not spoiling it for anybody, I don't think. But even to the point where the jury came back with a verdict, and as they were walking out of the courtroom, the judge nixed the verdict and, you know, said, "Hey, you got to serve 30 years. You're serving 50 years. When you guys all get out, you're going to owe the taxpayers $1.5 million," or blah, blah. Like, it was real. I was really impressed, or surprised. I won't say impressed. I was surprised that they put that in there and that they did it like that. But but I think part of it was, so I watched it with my wife, and she, you know, I pointed out to her, I was like, I think part of this, though, is just they're just trying to show people, you know, you try to hunker down and rise up, this is what's going to happen. Even if the government made a mistake,
Yeah.
this is still going to happen,
There's
sort of
no
thing.
escape.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no escape. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. I think I've got Showtime on streaming now. So I think they started including it with Paramount. So I think
Yeah, they
that's
did.
good. Okay,
Yeah.
I'll check it out. But yeah, so I think so, like I said, the siege at Ruby Ridge centered on the Randy Weaver and his
That was
family.
when, like 90, 89, 91,
No, I think it was 92, right before
92? Okay.
Waco.
Right before Waco. Yeah, okay.
And so Randy Weaver and his wife, I forget her name, it just slipped my mind, but they're from Iowa. And they were Randy Weaver had been a Green Beret in Vietnam.
Okay.
And I don't know if you, how old are you?
45.
Okay, so you're a couple years older than me. So you remember in the 80s all the Farm Aid, all that
Oh
stuff.
yeah.
Yeah.
Live Aid, I
So
mean all
yeah,
that.
all that
Yeah.
stuff. Yeah, so in the 80s, like these, for some reason, these I can't remember what was going on with all these farms, and like these, you know, guys had bigger farms. You know, I'm a homesteader, I got 16 acres. These guys had like real farms, but they were like family farmers. You know, they weren't
Yeah.
corporate guys. Not everything was owned by Bill Gates and Monsanto yet. They're probably selling stuff to Monsanto, but
Well,
we're
probably
doing it
was. It
for
just
them.
wasn't announced yet.
Exactly. And these just massive interest rates hikes just forced all these people to lose their farms, you know, and that's where John Cougar Mellencamp is getting like all his subject material for all his albums.
Right.
Just the poor American farmer, and he's losing his property. The
Yeah.
government's coming and seizing people's stuff and
But I
just
remember it
ruining
was a big
people's
deal too, because
lives.
it was like Willie Nelson played, and I mean all these, you
Yeah.
know, big time country artists back then, and the big time artists, you know, they all got together. Yeah.
Yeah. So Randy Weaver, I think they had a couple kids at the time. They went on to have four kids, but they were kind of fundamentalist Christians, and they started messing around a little bit with what was kind of sprouting up more and more in the 80s, which was Christian identity, which dealt with it was racist Christianity. There's no way around it. They believed that they believed that the white race was
The
the
perfect.
lost tribes of Israel.
Right.
And they believed that, like, I can't remember if they believed it was Jews as well. Jews are at the top for them, you know. They
Okay.
call it Zog, the Zionist occupation government.
Okay.
And you know, I'm willing to agree with them on some of that as well. So
Right.
but you know, they and they think they believed that like the sons, like Jews were the sons of Jews and blacks, and what they called mud people were the sons of Cain. So
Okay.
they took it that way. And I don't know if the Weavers were involved in exactly the identity Christianity, but they were adjacent somewhere in there. And they started, you know, getting real into revelations and thinking that we were in the end times and
Times,
things like
yeah.
that. And they always wanted to, you know, they wanted to get back to the mountains and raise their kids, you know, off grid without electricity in a religious setting. And so Randy was working at the John Deere factory in Iowa. And I think just the problems, you know, the downturn in the farming business like affected him. and he kind of saw the writing on the wall. The thing I've never really been able to hear about is like how he went and found this piece of property way, way up in northern Idaho. But he did. He finds this piece in Boundary County, Idaho. And if you've never been to the Idaho Panhandle and you ever get the chance, northern Idaho is one of the most beautiful, magical places I've ever been in my life. My wife and I just got back from a homesteading conference there a couple of weeks ago. Nice. Up in Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene's like the busy city. It's kind of like Palm Springs up in the mountains, a lot of real wealthy people. But if you head north from there towards Canada, it just gets to be incredible. And a couple of years ago, we got to go up there right during the lockdown, the heavy masking, all that stuff during the summer of 2022.
Okay.
2021. When I was living in the suburbs of Portland, where you couldn't get away with, you know, they were doing the deal here. And right. We've got to go to Idaho, and Idaho wasn't doing it. And it was just this magical experience. And we camped out like right on the Kootenai River, which is the border of Canada. Like I could see the border crossing, you know, from where we're camping. Okay. It was amazing. And there was nobody there. It was this gigantic campground. We had it all to ourselves because nobody was able to cross the border. So,
man,
but if you ever get a chance, head up there. So, and we went to Ruby Ridge.
I've been to Idaho once, but it was the southwest corner of it. He had a 5,000 acre ranch up there, and so he invited me to go up for an elk hunt once, and that was
awesome.
I've been, but yeah, it is pretty.
Yeah, that's way more probably like deserty down there.
Yeah, and, desert and like mountain.
Great Basin type deal.
Yep.
But so we were able to go to Ruby Ridge. But so he finds this piece of land, takes the family up there. They build, him and his wife build a plywood house, you know, and take the kids up there. They're growing food and hunting and doing the deal. And at that time, 60 miles south of them in Hayden Lake, Idaho, which is just the next town after Coeur d'Alene, is where the Richard Butler, an identity Christian preacher, sets up the Aryan Nations compound, which is, you know, his house. I think there was like bunk houses where people could stay. He had a whole bunch of people living there. And then he had his church. And, they're racist people.
Yeah.
Coming there, all sorts of different kinds, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, all these Christian identity groups.
Were they coming there for training, or were they coming there just because it was like-minded people, or kind of all the above?
Yep. And if you lived in that area and you were, you're a survivalist, you're into that stuff, that's, they had, you know, weekly barbecues where they'd try to recruit people, and people went there, and, you know, kids played together and stuff. And like it or not, you know, I'm not saying it's a good thing. It's just, that was the culture of northern Idaho at the time. That was an acceptable thing.
Yeah. And it's a community, right? And that's what, you know, even people like us in this community, we still look kind of for a community along those lines, maybe not the racist part, but the survivalist and like, hey, when the shit hits a fan, I want to be with you because you know more.
Yeah. And I've seen interviews with Randy Weaver's eldest daughter. I think she's our age. And she talks about being there, and she's like, you know, we went there because to meet people and make connections. And, she's like, my dad didn't agree with 100% with Christian identity. He was a white separatist. He just wanted to be left alone. And he was a white guy, you know, probably didn't want to live around black people, you know.
Right.
That was just his ideology at the time. And but she said he would go there and didn't really agree with Christian identity as his Christian view of the world. And he was ready. He would like have friendly debates with people and stuff like that. Also at that time, he is real hard up for money. I don't know what he's doing for work, if he's finding, you know, random construction work or what's going on, but he doesn't have any money to further any of the projects he's got going on or take care of his family. And he's looking for work when he goes down there. And but like I said, the whole PatCon thing's going on, and that place is just crawling with feds. feds and fed informants, you know, scumbag snitches. And he gets approached by one of them. And I don't know how the conversation goes down, but he agrees to saw the barrel off a couple of shotguns. The guy specifies the length that he wants, and it's a quarter inch shorter than what's federally regulated at the time. So quarter inch. Yeah. And you know, he wasn't going and soliciting people. You know, somebody came to he. It was like, you know, it's like how when the government goes and finds like autistic retarded Muslim guys and gives them bombs. Right. You know, it's the same deal. He just needed some money, and he does it. He does it for a guy, gives them back to him, and then you know, gets arrested. They arrest him and his wife. The FBI poses as a couple stuck in the snow somewhere in between the Aryan nations.
Oh, wow.
and his house, and they stop to help him. And that's how they arrest him, you know? Wow. And they try to flip him. That's the whole plan, is just get these guys on these little bullshit charges, be like, well, you know, this is a in breach of the National Firearms Act or whatever's going on at the time. You're going to do so much time in prison, or you can inform for us. You can go in there and tell us what's going on and give us people's names and information, or you're going to go to prison and we're going to take your property. Your family's going to be impoverished and, you know, break up and all that. He says, no, he won't do it. So he knows that he's going to get, you know, all this court paperwork in the mail. And they end up sending it to him after his court date scheduled. So he misses his court date. And then they inform him that. And they're like, oh, well, you're going to go, you know, you need to come turn yourself in. And he's just like, no, you know, this isn't right. And he holds up on the mountain at his house with the family and this one other guy, Kevin Jenkins. Kevin something. I can't remember his name. And what happens then is it becomes a case for the federal marshals to go and arrest him. He becomes a federal fugitive, even though they know where he's at. And the federal marshals are the ones that need to go get him. They go and they get a bunch of intel on him from people around. They're like, what if we just go up there and try to talk to him? Will it come down? Everybody says no. And then they find out he's like a Green Beret from Vietnam. So it gets blown out of proportion into this big old thing. And what happens is this, an order gets issued that if they need to go arrest him, and if they see them, any adult on the property armed, they are allowed to and should shoot them on sight. If the wording in the document was should. Yeah, should shoot on sight.
Not allowed, should.
Yeah, and the Weavers are armed 100% of the time.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's wild animals up there. They're hunting up there too, you know. Yeah. So they've always got a mini 14 on them. this is back in the days before the AR-15s and
right.
All those militia guys had mini 14s, which is totally awesome. I think we should go back to that. Mini 14s are rad. But yeah, one day, and they somehow sneak in and they put up motion sensor cameras all over the place, and so you can see footage of it. There's a PBS documentary on, you can find it on YouTube, and they actually do a pretty decent, honest job, believe it or not. It's from 2020. It's an hour long. I forget what it's called, but if you type in Ruby Ridge, it's the PBS one that comes up. It's like 53 minutes. And they interview his daughter a bunch. And so eventually a little strike team gets organized of federal marshals, and they go up and they're staking out the property and walking around to kind of get some intel on him. Randy, his son, and the other guy that's staying at the property with them are outside walking around. They hear Samuel, his son's dog, barking down the path. They walk down the path to go see what's going on. Maybe there's some deer down there or something. And there's like a path where two paths join together, and they call it the Y. As they're walking down there, they see the two federal agents. I can't remember if it's two or three. There's federal agents down there. Federal agents shoot the dog, because that's what feds do.
That's what they do.
Yeah, they shoot the dog to shut it up. His son, Samuel, the dog's name's Stryker. His son, Sam, sees that. It's his dog. He says, "You shot my dog, you son of a bitch." And he shoots the Fed, kills him.
Yeah.
And they immediately return fire. A gun battle ensues. 14-year-old Sam is shot in the elbow and in the back, and dies. And I remember this is for a quarter inch on a shotgun.
Right.
And
a missed court appointment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they, Randy and the other guy run back to the house. They, tell everybody what's happened. And, his wife starts freaking out there. She's like, we got to go get Sam, you know? So they walk down the path, get him, bring him back up, put him in the shed. And, from there on, the standoff really, really kicks off. The marshals get down the hill and call back to their office, say, you know, this guy's shot, killed. This marshal's dead. Send everybody. Send the state police, send the, you know, the army, reserves, everybody. And you know how cops are when one gets shot. And there's a big prairie down at the bottom. I don't know if it's their property or if it's like park service or Forest Service land, but this giant incident command post gets set up. Helicopters, Humvees, whatever, Bradley armored carriers, you know, stuff like that. And just gets the whole area gets flooded, and a standoff ensues. They're trying, I don't know if at that point they're trying to negotiate or anything, but they got snipers posted all over the place.
Right.
One day, I can't remember, Randy and another guy go out, and they go outside the house. As soon as they get outside, the guy Kevin gets shot in the shoulder or the arm. So by a sniper. And then they're running back into the house, and this guy, there's a sniper named Lon Horiuchi. He was at Waco too.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible person. And as the Randy Weaver's running back into the house, so when the standoff starts, when he's just like, "I'm not going to court," they've been there for like all winter, all spring, maybe almost like a whole year. Yeah.
Okay.
Like his wife, Vicky, had a baby during that time up there, and they're not leaving at all. People are coming and bringing them stuff, but they're not going down the mountain. His wife, they're running back into the house. They get the guy shot in, and right as Randy's about to get in, they hear another, you know, boom, and Vicky Weaver, bam, right in the head, shot by this guy Lon Horiuchi's, who's apparently a pretty good sniper, terrible, terrible human being, but drops this, you know, Randy, drops Vicky Weaver, and well, she's got her baby in her arms, she's dead. They bring her in the kitchen, and all the meanwhile, down at the bottom of the hill, like, the locals are getting restless, angry. They're just like lined up everywhere with signs, you know. yelling at the FBI. There's like a command post down there, and they're given, there's reporters from all over the country, and they're given daily briefings and stuff like that. And if you watch this documentary, you can see the point where they say that Sam was killed. And then as it goes on, you can see when they report that Vicky Weaver was killed. And man, it's crazy. The people are very, very, very upset about it. And I think at some point some neo-Nazi skinheads attempted to smuggle in a bunch of arms to them, got busted at the gate. And so as it goes on, Vicky Weaver's dead in the kitchen, Sam's dead in the woodshed outside, and everybody's not doing well.
Right.
They don't, there's no negotiating with him now. So the FBI starts looking for people that Randy can identify with. What they come up with is this guy, Colonel Bo Greitz. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, and the only reason I'm actually familiar with him is because he's in that Waco show. Because it starts off with Ruby Ridge. It's a real 50,000-foot view of it, but it starts.
It's a real quick deal. Yeah. That part is not accurate. I remember that part, but yeah, So Bo Greitz was a Vietnam hero.
Yeah, and in the Waco show, they almost made him look like an informant. Like, people hated him kind of thing because he was an informant or part of the government or something like that.
Yeah, it's somewhat questionable. But he was part of that whole Patriot radio thing that was on at that time. Yeah, he had a big, big, big radio following, like Bill Cooper and all that stuff. So they get him. He's supposedly who Rambo's based on.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they get, but he reminds me a lot more of the Brian Dennehy character, though.
the sheriff. But, Brian Dennehy was a sheriff, right?
But so he gets. All this time, the FBI says that they didn't know that Vicky was dead. But they totally knew.
Yeah.
And they were going up there with loudspeakers and saying trying to get them to come out every day. Yeah. And they were saying, after she was dead, they were saying, hey, Vicky, come out with the kids. We're cooking pancakes and waffles for breakfast. Wow. And so I mean, I think they totally knew. And I think that was just mental torture for them to hear him saying that stuff. And, Bo Greitz goes up there, appeals to Randy Weaver. Randy Weaver knows who he is immediately. Comes up. It's not like they didn't know each other, but he really respected the guy. I don't know. I guess he listened to his radio show, and he was in Vietnam too. So, they negotiate a deal. They set a time that he's going to come out. I can't remember why he didn't want to come out just right then. But I think he said he wanted to pray with his wife's body before he was arrested for a certain amount of time. So then Bo Greitz comes back on the agreed upon time. He says he needs more time. He eventually talks them into it. They surrender. They go down the hill. Randy Weaver goes to jail. They take the kids into protective, child foster care.
Right.
And long story short, Randy Weaver and the other guy go on trial for the murder of the marshal, and the longest deliberation up to that point of jury deliberation in Idaho history. They're both acquitted. I think they still get him on something to do with the rifle.
Sure.
I don't know if he had to serve a real small amount of time in county jail or something and a fine. And then in 95, they sue the government, get $3.1 million for the wrongful death of
Vicky.
The And he gives it, you know, each of his kids get $1 million.
Yeah.
And Randy Weaver goes on to be a hero of the far right patriot movement. And you know, he's kind of a broken dude though after that, you know.
I'm sure.
And he kind of just imagine. Lives out. He died recently, a couple years ago. He lived out his life just going to taking pictures with people at gun shows, signing autographs, stuff like that. And
so in your opinion, was this just 100% just a complete fuck up by the American government, or was this, do you give any inkling to the fact that this was almost kind of maybe not staged by Randy Weaver, but staged, like the government knew kind of what this was going to lead to, so they can institute more of a, because in my opinion, Ruby Ridge is kind of the start that really instituted the military state of the United States. You know, it very much militarized the police, the FBI, the everything. So do you think this, like, at least in their mind, that maybe they were just kind of hoping that this is where it would lead us to, like, they had to have this event to lead to a militarization, and then Waco ended up being the first such militarization of that? Or was this just kind of, they messed up and it just kind of happened?
I don't think there was some greater conspiracy to get it to lead to something else. I think the government's always going to end up paying people out and stuff like that, and still it's not going to change anything.
Right.
I guess his daughter in that documentary says that the ATF, the FBI, everybody that does like hostage negotiation or like SWAT team stuff uses this incident as what not to do.
Not to do.
Yeah. And then Waco happens after that, and it's supposed to be like the make good, get back on the public's good graces after that. But see, the thing is, like, if I went, you know, I lived in Oregon at the time, so my dad knew about it and stuff like that. And if I went and talked to my dad about it, he'd just be like, oh, yeah, that's that crazy, like, survivalist, racist dude who...
That's the way it was. Because I think I must have been in high school when Waco happened. And that's, you know, that's what I believe, because that's what everybody was telling me is, oh, this is just a cult leader. You know, he's not letting anybody leave. He's a crazy guy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, all that stuff, like, you know, there's a possibility he was sleeping with 14-year-old girls and molesting kids and stuff, and then there's a whole bunch of evidence that suggests that he wasn't, you know. And that stuff's like susceptible for people like us. When we hear that, we're like, oh, he's, you know, bad guy. But like David Koresh, like, went jogging every morning on the road, like outside the compound on on the public road, and they knew they could have just came and got him then.
Yeah. And it's interesting because apparently from what I understand too, that Timothy McVeigh was in the crowd at Waco watching all this happen, and so he saw it happen, and
he was down there selling stickers, bumper stickers and t-shirts.
And
he went down there a couple times.
That's how he got, you know, into kind of what he did, and then the whole Oklahoma City thing was his, you know, revenge for what happened at Waco, which, you know, for those of you who don't know, Oklahoma City happened on the same exact day, a year later than Waco?
Yeah, it was something. Hold on, let me grab this book over here.
It was the anniversary of, I can't remember if it was a year later or 2 years, 2 years later, but it was the anniversary to the day of Waco. But the interesting part about that is, for those of you who really hold tight to conspiracies and everything else, is that FBI building, there were no FBI agents in there that day.
Yeah. So if you want to go dive deep into that, look at this thing. That's a thick book. This is called, have you ever heard of this? Aberrations in the Heartland of the Real by Dr. Wendy Painting.
No.
It's the definitive book on Waco.
Okay.
And if you want, like, this lady is a badass. She went and found, like, just all these old gnarly white supremacist dudes that were all involved in all this 90s PatCon stuff.
Right.
Like, went and put herself in some real sticky spots and found guys. And if you listen, there's a podcast called Program to Chill, one of my favorite podcasts. Not a lot of people know about it. And this guy, Jimmy Fallon Gong, who's the host. He does an 11 episode series with Dr. Wendy Painting on this book and the real case. Really? And that is, Richard Booth is another guy. He's from like the Libertarian Institute, who knows a lot, and he does a lot. And, but this chick knows everything about it and went and lived it and found these old crusty dudes and put herself in some scary situations. So I recommend
it's interesting because I recommend, sorry, go ahead.
I just recommend everybody go listen to Program to Chill, that 11-part series. Yeah. I listened to it, you know, consecutively over 2 days and finished it.
That'll probably be my listening to while I drive around for the next couple of days. So, you know, it's interesting too, because I live in Texas. I live 2.5 hours from Waco, maybe 2 hours and 45 minutes from Waco. And then, you know, their compound is another 30 minutes or so outside of Waco, give or take. And it, you know, you go out there, and I had the like high expectations. I was going to, you know, be able to get out there and see something like really cool. It's like it's been bulldozed and trampled out. Like there is nothing there at all that you can see anymore. It's gone completely.
Is there even like cows or anything on it?
Is it fenced off? It's fenced off. There's a dirt part where you can tell the church and their living quarters and stuff must have been, but they're not there now. But it's just there's nothing there.
Yeah, it's absolutely erased. Nothing. And okay, so you say that. My wife and I went to Ruby Ridge to pay our respects.
Yeah.
And nothing. There's a little, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to like a national forest, but, you know, you can go to like little campsites. They'll have like picnic tables, and they'll have like a gazebo with a map on under plastic that shows the hiking trails and stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. Not a mention of, really? Of anything that happened there.
It's crazy. Yeah. Just wiping history away. So do you see Ruby Ridge as kind of a turning point in the nation then, or what is the significance, I guess, that you see in Ruby Ridge more than anything else?
I do see it as, you know, as the beginning of this militarization of these three letter organizations, and just the overreach that, and the public, I think the collusion with the media to frame this in a way that the public will, even though, you know, I think you would talk to anybody that knows a little tiny bit about what happened at Ruby Ridge, and they'd say that's when the government killed that racist guy, Randy Weaver. He deserved it, you know, got what he deserved. And I think that's kind of where it flipped from people thinking like, oh, you know, even though this guy's maybe not, you know, doesn't think of things what I would view as correctly, or, you know, he doesn't, I don't agree with him, but he probably did have the right to go live and just not be bothered.
Right.
And, I think that's kind of where the public started seeing it the other way. And, you know, and then just, there's no, what's it, two people, the guy's wife and his son got killed, $3 million, you know, that's, what's that?
Is that what nothing. Life is worth?
Yeah. And so. and then at that point, that was probably a huge payout too for the
yeah,
for what
I'm
happened.
Sure it was.
But you know, maybe the conspiracy, if anything, is what it signaled to these government agencies that we're not responsible for our actions, you know.
Right.
There's not gonna be any repercussions. They're gonna pay out a little bit of money, and we're going to get the most badass arms and training and all this stuff. And we're just going to be able to do whatever we want.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, scary because, you know, they definitely want to use it as a warning to, you know, even homesteaders, right. Of like,
right.
You know, for those, you know, you don't have cows, right. You raise a lot of things, but cows are not one of them yet.
Not yet. We're going to get a dairy cow soon, but I don't think we're going to do like a large scale cattle production. We have 16 acres, you know, so
even stuff like that, you know, it's, you know, they're starting to put the mandate out of, you know, we're going to put vaccines in what you're giving it, or you've got to vaccinate your animals, or you've got to put vaccines in what you're giving your animals. And so, like I said, I'm in Texas. I'm in kind of a rural area. We're on some acreage out here as well. And then up outside,
yeah, good for you.
Up outside of Waco, we've got another, it's like 86 acres or something like that, that
cool.
Someday we'll move up to and start living off that. But you're not even driving around where we're at. The sheriff department in this past year has started a livestock patrol portion of
their, oh, that's terrible.
Of their, and I don't know exactly what they do, but I know I see those trucks and it says sheriff department in Guadalupe County and Bexar County and Comal County, which are the kind of three counties around me. And it says livestock patrol. And I'm like,
interesting.
I don't want to see your truck show up on my property or anywhere near what I'm doing, because I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure someday it'll be, you've got too many chickens, or, oh, you didn't vaccinate your, you know, your pigs,
or you didn't register your rooster, you know,
or you've bought too much fertilizer filled with ammonium nitrate. Yeah. So now you're not going to get any for the rest of the year, or, you know, whatever it is. It's just, you know, and so being able to look at things like Ruby Ridge and Waco and all these things, it's like, that right there is just kind of waiting for, you know, waiting for their call to action, basically.
You ever get scared of the influx of people coming to your state from states like mine?
I don't get scared as much as I'm tired of them moving here because we don't have the infrastructure to keep them, you know, yeah. Or not to keep them, but it's just like all of a sudden a commute that used to take 5 minutes is now 20 minutes because it's, you know, it's just bumper to bumper to bumper. I'm not scared, partly because, so I'm originally from California. We moved out here about 20 years ago.
What part of California are you guys from?
Santa Barbara County.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time though up in like the San Francisco area and, you know, up in Redding and you know, Oakhurst and, you know, like all those kind of places. So I'm real familiar kind of, although it's funny because people think Northern California. Oh, San Francisco. No, San Francisco is not Northern California.
It's like, if you look at a map, San Francisco is like the middle. Yeah.
It's like the top of the Central Valley.
So. I was just down west of Redding last week for a couple days. And yeah, it's so crazy to think that what you say about even like Oregon, what you say when I'm from Oregon, people are like, oh, I'm sorry. Like all they think of is Portland or,
exactly. You know, or Eugene. All I think
it's like, dude, if you have never drive from Portland to San Francisco and like all there is from 10 minutes outside of Portland until you get to Fairfield, there's nothing but farmland.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just like, you know, tell somebody take the one up California. It's like, it's just an ocean scenic route. Like you're not
going to come
into a whole bunch of other things until you get to Big Sur. Then you got to kind of maybe navigate how to get around or whatever. But yeah, so no, I'm not scared about the people moving here. I don't have much of a hope for the way the political scene is going to go. So I don't necessarily believe them moving here or not is going to affect anything when, in that kind of structure or sense.
Yeah.
So just leave me alone. Really? That's, you know, that's more,
yeah.
As far as kind of what I am, you know, I tell people like, I guess I'm kind of an anarchist, but I'm just an anarchist is like, just leave me alone. That's all I want. Like, I don't want to torch the world and watch it go. I just want to be left alone. I'll leave you alone. You leave me alone. We're good. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. You know, we're out of the city, and I've never seen a police officer in my town.
Really?
Yeah. Well, there's no cops in my town, and I've never seen we live 12 to 15 minutes off the highway on a gravel road, and I've never seen a cop or a sheriff, and I've been here for over 2 years.
So here's something interesting for you. So I didn't realize, at least I haven't checked to see if it's all 50 states over, but in the state of Texas, I just found out that the cities here can dictate if they want the federal police, the state police here or not. The cities get to decide that. So a couple weeks ago, the city of Austin, their police department got under real big scrutiny because allegedly one of the officers pulled their gun on a 10-year-old kid. These are the Texas state troopers. Now the story goes, they were following the guy. Guy pulled
up. Is that different than the Rangers?
That's different than the, so there's So we've got like six different police here. We've got the state troopers, we've got the rangers, we've got your city police, we got the sheriffs, we got constables, we got, I don't know, there's at least one more that I'm not thinking
of. We just got the state police, which is like our CHP.
Yeah.
And then we have the sheriffs and city cops.
So the state police follow this guy home. Kid gets out of the car because he has to go to the bathroom. And the story goes that an officer pulled his gun out as the kid was exiting the vehicle. Granted, officer had no clue who was exiting the vehicle, probably. Whatever. I wasn't there. I don't know. But the mayor of Austin has decided to cancel the contract with the state police here. He says The state police are no longer allowed in the city of Austin, which I had no clue that was even an option for, you know, states or cities or whatever to be able to dictate which police departments could come in and out of their cities.
Yeah, but Austin kind of seems like a place that might need some extra policing at this point in time, doesn't it?
Austin is missing 3,200 police officers right now.
And is that the absence of the state police or just
no? That was the shortage of the defund the police.
Okay, so they're going to be short that, and now the state police are filling police in for those.
But with that, the governor has said, I'll just send the National Guard up to help out.
Yeah, so the governor can do that. I got you.
Governor can do that. But yeah, I thought it was interesting though that I don't know what other states have as far as rights go, but I just thought it's kind of interesting that states can or cities can say we don't want you here.
Yeah, I don't mind sheriffs. We got a good one in my county. He put out a letter to the governor of just a fuck you during the lockdowns. And he's like, we're not doing that here. Businesses can do what they want.
Nice.
So yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm an hour from Portland, and we didn't do, as soon as we got out here, we didn't do any of the thing. We didn't I do all my business here.
Right.
Very top in Northwest Oregon. And I go across the bridge to Southwest Washington for like Home Depot and stuff like that. And it's super based up there. They don't, it's a logging mill town, And so like, there's none of that.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I'm going to shift gears kind of here. I'm going to ask you, sure. And I know you've talked about this on your podcast with Chud and then with Deborah and all that, but we talked about Ruby Ridge and kind of, it you can kind of see where it led in the militarization, but your first kind of aha moment into this conspiracy realm, truth realm, whatever, where you were finally ready to plant your flag as far as, okay, these are conspiracies. Like, there may have been things where you're like, that doesn't really make sense. This doesn't necessarily, but where you planted your flag of like, okay, everything I see is wrong. This is absolutely, I can tell you this is 100% wrong. This is where I understand now that, powers that be or whatever are the ones kind of holding the cards and making it seem different than it is.
What was mine? You're asking me?
Yeah. What was yours?
I got it. It's geopolitical, it's left, right paradigm stuff, but it is, election 2016, leading up to it in 2015. I'm a union guy, staunch union guy. I started out in the Union Iron Workers, did a bunch of years there, and then transferred and got hired into the Elevator Constructors Union. And I'm doing what I buy in. I'm doing what everything they tell me to do. They're telling me, they want the centrist Democrat. But I started listening to Bernie Sanders, and it's at the time when Bernie Sanders is selling out stadiums, and Hillary Clinton's is playing cafeterias at high schools. And,
Trump before Trump.
Yeah. Trump's on the other side. I got TDS at that time, And I'm buying the whole democratic socialist deal. Like, we got to, just take care. I was a working class dude. I wanted people to be nice to working class people and people. I didn't want unions to do what they're supposed to do. And, I'm giving money. I'm doing those small donations to Bernie Sanders every week, every paycheck. I'm giving him $25, And then when it comes time, he bows out. What happens is I'm watching all these state not the caucuses, what do they call this, the primaries,
or the primaries?
Yeah, I'm watching all the primaries. And do you remember the super delegates?
Yes.
Yeah. So like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton would go, they were the two last Democratic candidates. They would go to some state that would have a set amount of delegates that you're supposed to get for if you win the state's primary. And Bernie Sanders would go in. And I think some states you take them all, and then in some states you get a percentage based on the votes. There's a set number. If you get 80%, you get 80% of the delegates. Every time Bernie Sanders goes in, he wins. And then there was super delegates, and there was a group of people who all worked for the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, who had these extra super delegate votes. They would all, every one of them would give them to Hillary Clinton. And right. So Bernie Sanders would go and he'd win the state, and then Hillary Clinton would leave with more delegates. And so then I'm like, that does not seem right. You know, I was retarded. I drank a lot. I quit drinking in 2012, and my brain was starting to like work again. I was having more thoughts than just like, I need to get to Friday night. And so I start weighing all that out. Then eventually Bernie Sanders quits and kisses the ring, kisses the Clinton ring, and it endorses them instead of like being like, oh, I'm going to go run third party. And I'm like, how can he do that? They just, you know, and it came out that Hillary Clinton had been fed the questions that they were going to ask her by CNN at the debates, all this stuff like that. And it's news that is for everyone to know. It's not conspiracy. Right. And I'm like, how does this stuff go on? You know, little do I know it's been going on since the inception of any form of government.
Right.
But yeah, so that really soured my thoughts of what was going on. And then, you know what I did? After that, I go and I vote for Hillary Clinton, you know, because my union told me to. So that's one of the great shames of my life. But it's something I can look back on and laugh.
Right.
Because, yeah. And, you know, that woke me up. And then, you know, I hear Dave Smith on Joe Rogan, I think in 2016 or whatever. And he's talking about, you know, libertarianism and, you know, maximum personal responsibility and all that stuff, and stuff that I'd never really considered, you know. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like the right way to go for me. I go down the ANCAP rabbit hole real deep and read a whole bunch of boring stuff. And then, you know, at the same time, I'm getting red-pilled on wild conspiracies. I'm listening to Tinfoil Hat. I'm listening to Crow 777 and shit like that. So I'm glad that I was, you know, I don't consider myself an ANCAP anymore. I'm just a Christian. But I'm glad that I got the economics and the conspiracy, like the real deep conspiracies, dumb stuff that, you know, that's fun to listen to all together. Right. And so I have a pretty good understanding of economics, and as good as I want to have. And yeah, that was it. I was off to the races. And then you know, I was always like, man, these I love listening to podcasts. They're great, but they're all, you know, it's just a couple guys in a room together agreeing with each other. Like I used to just troll Deborah super hard. Like every time I'd see her, I'd tell her, you know, she's Jewish, and I'd like tell her like she didn't know what like a bris was. I'd be like, you know, those rabbis, they bite the baby's little penis and suck the blood out. And she'd be like, no, they don't. They don't, that doesn't happen. I'm like, yeah, they do. Sometimes those babies get herpes, you know? And like, look it up. One time I got her husband to get, I told him that at a wedding, we were at a lesbian wedding, and I told him that, and he got so mad at me, he started yelling at me. I saw the rage in his eyes, and I just like looked it up, and it was like on like MSNBC.com or something, like Orthodox rabbi in Brownsville, Brooklyn, or whatever gives baby herpes, like, you know, just stuff like that. And then I was like, well, maybe I could, but I love Deborah. I love my in-laws are great. And, you know, so I was like, how about I start a show? I always wanted to do it with her and just blow her mind and make her uncomfortable.
It's fantastic what you do and just kind of the premise of the show. And, you know, being able to take somebody who is so staunchly on the other side and kind of help them wake up, or like, it's fantastic. I love listening to your show just because the dynamic of it.
Yeah. I got a little burnt out.
It's not just Masons and Tartaria and lizard people and, you know, Democrats bad, Orange Man good, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, it's got a lot of, you know, it's good. I don't
know. Yeah, I mean, we definitely did do Masons and lizard people and Tartaria a whole bunch, but yeah. And then, you know, like, we got to the point where I was just kind of like burnt out on that. I'd met a lot of people who, you know, we did almost 200 episodes, and I talked to all these people who are supposed experts. And I was, the farther you get into the game, you're going to realize, man, that guy was kind of full of shit. You know,
right?
Like, I thought this guy was super smart and knew a whole bunch of stuff. And it's like,
nobody knows anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I got burnout, you know, and I was having a hard time on the homestead. It got real busy real fast. Like, it's dark and rainy and muddy here all winter, and it's hard to get stuff done. And then spring hits, and it's like a million miles an hour. And I had a whole bunch of pigs and lambs running around and all sorts of stuff. So I'm sure
your pigs found every hole in your fence too, didn't they?
Dude,
they let you know where every hole is.
Yeah, I'm building pig pens right now. Some good ones that are working. And then I got there's like an old cistern that was like concrete.
Okay.
Cistern that's like hollowed out now and everything. It's like kind of ruins, but I was able to put the piglets in there. There was one that kept getting out, so she's just like the yard pig now. We ended up using
old frames from trampolines, from like the big trampolines that are like 20 feet around. We got those frames and then put a bunch of hog paneling around it, or chicken wire.
Oh, cool. That's
what we use.
Yeah, and so we named the one that keeps escaping Houdini, and she's just like the yard. Her name's Hootie. She's just the yard pig. but we're taking the summer off, and you know, I've actually really enjoyed not having to like do podcasting for a while. So I'm thinking maybe we're gonna come back in the fall if I'm feeling it, and changing the title to Deborah Got Red Pilled. But I gotta figure out. Yeah, I got to figure out, because she knows. I mean, she's not going to change anything in her life, but she knows that the media is full of shit. She believes that the moon landing's fake. I know she's a flat. She'll say the moon landing didn't happen. That's the biggest one I got her on. 9/11, you know, second episode, I got her on that one. But I know she's a flat earther. She won't admit it, but I know she's into flat earth. I got to figure out a little gimmick, and maybe we'll be back in the winter time or something.
That's
like
good.
That,
I mean, even if you just come back with the same thing, like, it's, you know, it's good. I like it too when you have her kind of, or when you and her both go over, you know, different books. You're like, hey, we're reading a book, and it's going a lot slower than we thought it would, but, you know, we're on chapter two, and this is what it's about. So
that's what kind of discouraged me, was because we were doing Program to Kill, which is a rad book, and I was like, I just want to do parapolitics and stuff like that. Like, stuff that's really happening, you know, like this Oklahoma City stuff, parapolitics, all that. And I love like the 90s conspiracies around like what we just talked about, the PatCon. Right. And so I'm reading this book right now called The Silent Brotherhood, and it is about this guy, Bob Matthews, who was like a teenage John Bircher.
Okay.
And he went on to move up to, you got all these guys were just like super into fighting communism, and then they get into the JQ question, you know. And he So this book is written in 1989. So Ruby Ridge, he's running around up there at the Aryan Nations up in northern Idaho, and he starts his own thing. Doesn't join Aryan Nations or anything like that, but recruits guys from there, and they start robbing banks. They start out real small. They're like trying to drive. They drive to Spokane, Washington, and they're like, we're Christians, so we can't do anything too bad, but we could go rob pimps and porn shops. So but they don't even know like what a black guy looks like, pretty much. Like they drive to Spokane, Washington, which is the closest place that would have prostitution, and they're looking for like Superfly.
Shaft.
Yeah, they're like following like Cadillacs and stuff like that. And then they like,
he's got a fur coat, go get him.
They go and rob a porn shop and get like $300, and like it's like a you know, just making every error you can in the book. But eventually they get good, and they rob a Brinks truck for $3.8 million in Ukiah, California, and they use that to just finance all their stuff.
Really?
They get arrogant, and that's how they get caught. But they were assassinating guys too. They have you ever heard of this guy Alan Berg?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're the ones that murdered him.
Really? What's the book called?
The Silent Brotherhood. It's hard to find. You got look for it.
So it's gonna be one of those that are like $500 on eBay.
No, it's not that hard, but you just got to go to like Goodreads or to like Thrift Books and find it there.
Okay.
And if you go. I just watched it the other night. My wife and I are done with new movies. We're just watching old 80s and 70s. We want to watch only movies that are filmed on film.
Okay.
Like we watched Urban Cowboy the other night. Fantastic movie.
That's a John Travolta one?
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you go back in 1988, there was a movie with the star Deborah Winger and Tom Berenger called Betrayal.
Yes.
It's not very good, but it's based on – that guy is based on – Bob Matthews.
Really?
Tom Berenger is based on Bob Matthews. Like they killed the Jewish shock jock that's supposed to be Alan Berg.
Really? I've seen that movie, and it's probably been 20, 25 years at least.
Yeah, I remember watching it when I was in college, I think. So yeah, it's worth a watch.
Yeah. You know, the thing that did it for me, going back to your talking about politics and, you know, the Bernie Sanders thing. So I always knew politics was kind of a dirty game, but the thing that really sealed how dirty it was for me was, I don't know, it was like where you were at, but when Trump won or was about to win, predicted to win, that's when I realized I wasn't voting for a candidate. I'm voting for the people to go cast the ballot for the candidate is what it is. You know, the Electoral College. And we have people here in Texas who were supposed to be on the Electoral College saying, if Trump wins, I am not voting for him.
Yeah.
So the Electoral College can change my vote or the majority vote. And once I realized that, I was just like, what's the point? Like, there's absolutely no point if this person can be like, well, in the grand scheme of things, I think this is going to be the better vote. So this is what my conscience is telling me to do. Then what's the point of me even voting if somebody can just change?
Yeah. And if you look at it from the other side, remember Mike Pence was supposed to not certify the election or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's just nuts. Just so what's the solution then? If somebody comes up to you or somebody, you know, sends you a message through Instagram, is like, hey, I've been listening to your podcast, really starting to get, you know, to understand what you're saying. You know, it's not what I think it is. What should I do? What would you tell them?
What was their question? I've been listening to your podcast. I'm what?
What, you know, and I'm now starting, let's go like with Deborah. Let's say Deborah wasn't your mother-in-law. Okay. And Deborah's, you know, very much on the liberal side or the, you know, whatever. And Deborah just emails you and sends you messages like, hey, I've been listening to your podcast. You make a lot of sense. I'm starting to see just really how messed up things are. What is my course of action? What would you suggest I do?
Don't put any faith in princes or sons of men. That's what we say
sounds biblical.
It is. It's what they say at our church. You know, I followed this. I've been black-pilled. I've been white-pilled. I've been everything in between. I dug into the rabbit hole so deep and realized that I was, you know, trying to maybe express Christianity through all these different ways that I was living. And, you know, when I finally realized that that's what was happening, and that what's going on out in the world is far, far deeper than what's on the surface, and this is a real spiritual battle, and there's actual good and evil. I mean, you can drive to Austin,
yep,
and see real evil spirits infesting people on the streets. I can drive to Portland and see
if you've never been to Austin. Austin is basically, it's a smaller version. Well, it used to be a smaller version. I don't think it's smaller anymore, of San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, I live in, you know, Portland, Oregon is where my wife works, you know. And it's like you see these people on the streets and you'd be like, oh, and then the blue-pilled liberal will be like, you could say to them, oh, is that guy over there who's like naked rolling around in the street yelling at demons in his head, is his problem the fact that he can't get a $600 one-bedroom apartment? Is that the issue? It's like, no, it's far, far deeper than that. And yeah, I mean, for me, the solution that I found, I won't tell this to people because I don't go to an evangelical church, but right. For me, the solution was, you know, the Eastern Orthodox Church, you know, and that's what I found. And when you start living for something that is more than just what's on the material surface of the world, and realizing that you're responsible to something much bigger and larger than what's here, that's what gives me comfort in life. And, you know, if it doesn't have to be that, I mean, that's what I would suggest to anybody that's looking into Christianity to go do. But yeah, I mean, I'll say what everybody else is going to say. It's just, it's get out of the goddamn city for one, you know, that's step one. And, you know, a lot of people say they can't do everything you can, get to the suburbs and then get out of the suburbs, you know, just one step at a time. And then it's just family. It's just, that's all there is. There's people that you can love and who are going to love you back no matter what. That's all there is to it, you know. And don't, you know, once you get caught up in all this left, right, you know, anything like that, it's not good for you.
No, it is not.
It's fun. It's fun to learn about.
It's fun.
Dive as deep as you can until it starts, like, until you start becoming a, you know, if you look into the darkness for too long, it looks back. That's the saying. It's the truth, man.
That was my problem, was I, you know, when I kind of first dove into this community, like I dove head first and I was listening to, you know, 50 different podcasters, all kind of all talking about the same thing, but different subjects. And I got depressed real quick, you know, because it was just like there was no fun in anything. There's nothing to enjoy at all. So I had to pull back and be like, okay, 3 or 4, maybe 5 podcasts, and that's about it. And some of these I'm not even going to listen to some of their episodes, because it's like you said, you can get too far in too quick, and then you know, then you want to talk about a version of drowning. You know, that's what happens, is, you know, you get blackpilled real quick, and it's just, you know, once Matt over at Monday Night or over at the Great Deception podcast took baseball away from me and made me realize how Masonic it was, that was like, that was it. I was like, you know what? Life isn't even worth living anymore if you're taking baseball away from me.
Yeah. Yeah. I got UFC. I've got like coffee.
Right.
Got, you know, that,
well, you got your animals. Are, you know, there's something to be said too about, so growing up in California, you know, my thing was I surfed, you know, 280 days out of the year at least. You know, I was at the beach probably at least 320. So when I wasn't surfing, it was just being in the water, being with family. I moved to Texas. Now I'm landlocked. I'm like, okay, what do I got to do? And now I wish growing up, so in California where I was, you know, like the kind of people I hung out with didn't associate with like the farmers and the FFA kids and all this. I wish I'd have associated with the FFA kids and all that.
Yeah.
The 4-H kids a lot more, because, you know, when we moved out here, I was like, well, I got to do something. So let's get some chickens. Let's try chickens, you know, and then chickens turned into pig, or chickens turned into turkeys, and turkeys turned into pigs, and pigs turned into other things are goats now. And, you know, now it's, we've got bees on our property that we keep as well. And, you know, all kinds of things. And it's like, I have more fun doing that and enjoy being out there and just sitting. Well, not right now, 'cause it's like 109 every day, but when it's not 109, being able to sit out there with my animals and just, you know, pet them and scratch them and let them come up. And, you know, there's just something to that, you know, because it's not dependent on, you know, electricity or, you know, whatever else. It's just, you know, there's something innate in all of us. We're like, this is where it's supposed to be. Take my Crocs off, dig my feet into the dirt, pet my animals. And
yeah. For me, it's, I just got to stay busy, you know, like the whole thing with the idle hands or the devil's play tools. I just got to go all day long. I wake up, I start doing chores, and I go until my wife gets home and cook dinner and, you know, read and go to bed. Yeah. Like my wife, if she has a day off, she'll freak out sometimes and like just lay in bed and not know what to do. And she'll be like, I had anxiety, I can't get out of bed, you know? And she'll be like, I'd be like, yeah, I got that too. That's why I get up and go and don't stop, you know? So. Oh, John, you froze. Okay. I think you're back. You're muted though. I can't hear you.
Are you there?
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay, perfect. Sorry. I fidget a lot and I accidentally grabbed my AirPods, and so I think it connected to my AirPods instead of my computer. Oh, so
got it.
That's my problem, is I fidget. I'm maybe not ADD, but like I just can't sit still. So yeah. My fingers have to fidget with something.
Yeah.
So I completely lost everything that you said.
Sorry, man.
Say it one more time.
Yeah, I just gotta, like I was saying, I gotta from the time I get up till the time I'm done for the day, when my body's like, okay, it's time to go in, I can't stop, you know. That's when all the bad stuff will start coming in. So
yeah, no, you know, it's great. And it's almost, you know, you can kind of feel like this is almost what you were made for. So, or like this is what humanity needs and is missing, and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
Well, man, this has been good. I really don't have anything else, unless there's anything else you want to talk about or say or anything like that. So
No, I think I'm good, man. That's good talk. Right. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, let everybody know where they can find you, maybe in the fall and winter when you come back. And
yeah, you can go back. All our stuff's still up, you know, just Deborah Gets Red Pilled, wherever you want to look at, wherever you get your podcasts. We got an Instagram that's not active right now. And then if you want to follow my wife and I's homestead, it's on Instagram at Rising Tide Homestead, all one word. Just how it sounds. So you'll see a whole bunch of fun videos that my wife does of pigs and sheep and Great Pyrenees dogs and all sorts of funny stuff. So
the stuff that you guys have, is it just for yourself, or are you guys doing any kind of trading with it real quick? Or,
well, we're still in that in between phase where we're getting like our first batch of piglets will be, okay. I got guinea hogs, so they take a long time.
Yeah.
So I think I might get a couple just regular pigs to do, just to grow. That only take like 7 months, so I can get one done quicker than that. But and then the sheep are, I'll have a bunch of sheep ready in the fall to eat. So yeah, my wife sells eggs every week, and just for some that spending cash.
Side of the other day, I had one of the blades on our fan broke, and I found a lady who had the same fan that we had, and she wanted $10 for her fan. So I texted her. I was like,
how about I give you 24 eggs
yeah.
for your plan? And she said, oh, absolutely. I was like, oh, this is fantastic. Like, this is the whole reason I got into this now is to be able to trade things. I was, man, I was so happy.
Yeah, that's a good deal. Yeah, it's real hard to make any kind of money on the scale that I'm gonna do. So, right. But I think if we get that dairy cow, that's where you can start making a little bit of cash.
And I just want to get to the point where I can trade things. Like, hey, you have this, I have this. You know how to do this, I've got this. Let's just trade
rather than
deal with money.
So, yep.
All right. Well, this has been fun, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Very much. I appreciate it, man. Stay in contact, bro.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots, playing God all day, deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, oh, she burns in hell. Every damn one of you is a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.